Hello and welcome to the Hindus Parlay Podcast. The rupee weakened past 81 against the dollar for the first time ever last week. The RBI's intervention in the forex market to help stem the volatility by selling dollars has meant that our forex reserves have fallen by about 94 billion over the course of about 12 months to about 545 billion in mid-September. How much lower can we afford to let our reserves go? Is there a correct level for the rupee? Where does the interest rate as a policy tool figure in all of this? To share perspectives with us today, we have Mr. Dharmakirti Joshi, Chief Economist at CRISIL Limited, and Professor Lekha Chakraborty from the National Institute of Public Finance and Policy with us today.
Are we comfortable at where we are? Or, you know, when the forex reserves went to below $600 billion, we had several economists say, even if another $100 billion were spent in defending the rupee, we'd still be comfortable because we had spent our time shoring up our forex reserves when the times were good. And now is the time to use those reserves to make sure that volatility or defending the rupee are actions RBI must take. What is your view, sir, now?
Well, I think I agree that the use of forex reserves is appropriate at this juncture. Otherwise, why do you build them? I mean, you, as you rightly said, you build your reserves during good times and spend them during bad times. And right now, trying to defend the rupee or trying to curb volatility, to be precise, I think you can't defend the rupee at a particular level because that would be swimming against the tide, which is not possible in this environment. But you can certainly make it less volatile. And having said that, I think there is also a limit to how much you can lean on the reserves. I think they can burn out pretty quickly. I mean, if you are very aggressive in your interventions, I think we've seen this happen in China as well, where I think they burnt a lot of reserves a couple of years back. So clearly, you need a multi-pronged approach, I mean, and which essentially involves several measures by the RBI, which some of them they've already taken, essentially to increase the supply of US dollars in the Indian market. I think they were trying to make some investments more attractive to the foreigners, I think. And we've also seen in 2013 that I think you can also attract NRIs to bring in the money. I think these are some of the measures that supplement the use of reserves in stabilizing the currency. In addition to that, I think you also need to let the rupee depreciate in an orderly manner. I mean, as I said, the some depreciation of the rupee will partly help the export sector, not too much. And it'll also, I think, curb imports to some extent. So the vulnerability that stems from a high current account deficit, that gets addressed to some extent because of weakening of the currency. And finally, I think the interest rate channel also needs to be used. And I think the monetary policy is going to be announced on 30th of September. We believe that RBI will go in with 50 basis point hike, and part of it will be to address domestic concerns, and part of it will also be to address or to mute the impact of Fed rate hikes. I mean, not fully, but partly, because the interest rate differential between India and US is rising. And so this will is narrowing. So this will kind of widen that a bit and reduce the risk. So I think you need a variety of measures, but Forex is, of course, the first line of defense, and this should be used judiciously and appropriately. And I think I would be pretty satisfied with the deft management of the currency so far.
Wow, that covers a lot of points, Priyam, some of my later questions, but that really sets the tone for the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Joshi. If I can turn to Professor Chakraborty, Mr. Joshi actually talked about measures that the RBI has adopted. You know, my query was to do with what approaches do you think, Professor Chakraborty, should the RBI take to shore up reserves in the context of FPI outflows? Recently, I think ECB norms were eased. Today, the media reports talk about a special window for forex window for oil firms, and that tool has been used in the past. What gaps do you think that are there, or would you like to comment on these norms specifically?
I do completely agree with Mr. Joshi's point on the limitations or the room for RBI to continuously do the volatility management in the market, because by mandate, exchange rate management is not the cup of tea of RBI. Now, RBI, through this new monetary policy framework, has moved entirely to price stability. The inflation containment is a mandate of RBI. So within that mandate, you know, right now we are facing the reality of this rupee volatility. So here, you know, intervening in the forex market, I do completely agree with Mr. Joshi about that point, the limitations of us in intervening the foreign exchange market. But having said that, the root cause of this rupee volatility right now, the predominant source is coming from the Fed Reserve's decision. As Mr. Joshi pointed out, you know, they are into an aggressive hawkish mode. It is affecting a part of the hot money part of our forex. So this FPI, the foreign portfolio investors moving out, it's creating volatility in the forex market. So if the root cause of that volatility in the market is predominantly the decisions by the Fed to go hawkish, then interest rate defense is the right answer to that. That's the policy tool we should be using, the interest rate defense, because the volatility management can also give some sort of a panic signal, you know, to the market. So stick on to the interest rate defense will be very crucial. And as Mr. Joshi pointed out, in the coming up MPC meetings, if we can front load that for this macroeconomic stability and for the stability in the currency markets, if we can front load that to a terminal rate of 50 basis point high, that could be the effective solution to stem this crisis to a great extent. Of course, I can understand geopolitical uncertainties and war in Ukraine, energy price volatility, all these contribute to this situation. But predominantly, in the Western world going hawkish, the Fed Reserve, Jay Powell, in his articulation in the Jackson Hole meetings about going hawkish in a series of interest rate hikes, then, you know, the predominant narrative should be interest rate defense rather than, you know, a continuous currency market management by intervening to control the volatility. Let the rupee depreciate. Yeah.
Mr. Joshi, we appear to have roughly, and I'm open to correction, but my back of the envelope calculation tells me that we have, in terms of forex reserves, about 9 months worth of import cover. You know, I understand that there should be some formulaic approach to what is the right forex quantum for an economy of our size. In your view, for an economy of India's size, what is an ideal cover? Is that a good way to measure import cover? Is there anything else we should be looking at that India is missing out from a policy tool point of view?
Well, I think the import cover is one of the ways in which you measure your adequacy of reserves. But I think it's a very narrow measure, I would say. There are other measures that have been suggested, and we do look at them from time to time. And one of them is Guidotti-Greenspan rule, where I think they look at the short-term liabilities, particularly on external debt, short-term debt, which is debt less than 1 year. I think the forex reserve should be sufficient to service them. So what we typically used to do is have the current account deficit plus the debt that is maturing in 1 year. Is the forex reserve sufficient to take care of that? I think that is a more broad-based measure of looking at the adequacy of reserves. And I think from that measure, I think we still have adequate reserves. We had more than adequate reserves, I think, during the pandemic period. I think when we were actually, when the CAD was low, and I think we had a lot of capital come in, and RBI was kind of accumulating its reserves. Now, I think the cover, according to the Greenspan-Guidotti rule, has reduced, but it is still it's still in the sufficient zone, I think, because they, according to them, the ratio should be one. And I think we are adequately covered at this juncture.
And that ratio currently would be what, if you were to dwell on figures?
We haven't computed. I don't have the latest number, but my sense is that that ratio had gone up to something like 7 during the pandemic. We had more than sufficient reserves. Now, I think it has come down. I don't have the latest number, but I think from what I what we assessed recently, I think it should still be above 1.
Got it. Okay. Professor Chakraborty, you talked about, let the rupee depreciate, look at interest rate as a tool to stem outflows. So a couple of points. One is the outflows is essentially, like you said, it's external, right? And there's little control that we have over that, and we'll try and use the interest rate tool. One, is that adequate? Because there's only so much you can do to control external factors. And second, when you say that let the rupee depreciate, there is talk of, we've always used the real effective exchange rate. either 6 country or 40 country. And it looks like the rupee is about 2.7-2.8% overvalued currently in that context. Should the second part of my question is, should the RBI look at the RER at all as a guidepost when it comes to stemming volatility? Or how critical is this tool? I understand you said, you know, let the rupee depreciate. How much do you think the RBI can go and let it depreciate? Because it does impact our imports, and considering our exports may also be impacted because of fears of global recession when that hits us. So already we have a widening trade deficit. How critical is the RER as a tool to help determine a policy approach?
Well, a real effective exchange rate, using that as a critical tool to contain the volatility, I think that may not be a good approach given the deep, the root cause of the outflow or the deep cause for the plummeting forex. So I don't buy that argument. But what I want to do is to stick to your first point of interest rate defense. And in, you know, on September 30th, if we can move back to the neutral stance from this accommodative, if you can go back to that normalization procedure, then that could be that front loading of the rate hike could be an effective way for the macroeconomic stability. And you mentioned about the crisis earlier in 2013, when we faced this crisis, you know, we are now a little better than 2013. We tried capital controls. We also tried, you know, high frequency interventions in the foreign markets, in the currency market. But what helped us was to look into the macroeconomic fundamentals of our country. So if the macroeconomic fundamentals are given importance, and if they are under control, and if we can go ahead with an interest rate defense, that could be a much better strategy than using the real effective exchange rate, you know, as a management for the currency volatility. Of course, it is real effective. So here, the nominal rate is deducted for the inflation. And this mounting inflation is also feeding into the imports. And that is also, you know, widening the current account deficit. But the current account deficit, of course, we lived with even the 4% of GDP, the current account deficit. But what is important is how you finance the current account deficit. So if we can conveniently finance the current account deficit with capital flows, if we can prevent that hot money outflow because of the interest rate differentials, if we can do something over there, that could be the long-term effective solution. The front loading of the rates right now, maybe as Mr. Joshi pointed out, by 50 basis points in September itself. So that's, I think, can be a long-term strategy than, you know, intervening in the market based on the real effective exchange rate.
Mr. Joshi, it's interesting that the professor talks about, you know, RER may not be such a great tool after all. One, I'd like your view on this particular tool and as a determinant to help us understand how much more it could be, you know, if it's overvalued currently. Secondly, what I understand from the professor's point is that if we just look at the interest rate as a tool, and hopefully as we increase that by a few basis points every now and then that could hopefully stem FPI outflows, and that will automatically help us with the exchange rate that we are struggling with currently. On both these counts, would you agree? What would your viewpoints be?
Yeah, I would broadly agree. I think the RER, we typically use to see the competitiveness of exports. And I think our view is that and empirically we have tested it also, that even if the RER weakens a lot, I think the nominal currency weakens a lot, in either of the cases, I think that doesn't push exports much. I mean, in the environment where global growth is sinking, because the dominant variable is global GDP, and I think that has a far more greater impact on your trade. So that is one way to look at the RER. I would say that I think the targeting the currency is anyway not a good approach. I think, as I said earlier, if you try to go against the tide, I think it's very difficult to win that battle. I mean, so I would agree that the letting the rupee depreciate a little bit, I think, because that will correct some of the imbalances. And also at the same time, I use the interest rate instrument, which I think is a last instrument to be used, but I think is required at this juncture. I mean, when the Fed is extremely aggressive. So I would agree with Professor Chakravarti on this count, that I think the interest rate instrument has to be used. What it means is that the interest rates are being raised not only to control inflation, but also to address external imbalances. But having said that, I think now I was just, while you were asking this question, I was also thinking about the past episodes of sharp depreciation of the currency, which we have seen during global financial crisis, during the taper tantrum. And also, I think before the pandemic hit us, I think the central bank in US was trying to raise interest rates. I think that also had led to capital outflows. I think all these episodes tell us that currency weakens very sharply during these episodes of global shocks. But then it also corrects. I mean, if you plot it over a 15 to 20 year period, you will see that the overshooting of the currency typically gets corrected after the event is over. So it's essentially to maintain, to ensure that the volatility is not too high. I think that is the role, that is where the, to put it in context, that is where the Forex reserve role comes in. I mean, that to stem the volatility to whatever extent you can, not to steer the currency in any direction. Once this situation improves, I think the rupee typically tends to come back to its normal value.
That was insightful. Okay. Professor Chakraborty touched upon the CAD, and we've had predictions, and now that's becoming more and more plausible that CAD, current account deficit, as a percentage of GDP, could touch anywhere between 3.5 to 4%. And in the past, when things were, going well, we've had, I think Deputy Governor of RBI once talk about 2.7 to 3% is something that they could live with. But if it does hit 4% at all, is that something? What consequences do you see for the economy if the CAD touches 4% as being projected?
I would love to look at this in a holistic manner of the current account deficit and the capital account. Because if you look into these two, if you are comfortably financing the current account deficit, even if it's shooting up to four, then, I will be a little comfortable. So the focus is on how we can stem the capital outflows. The capital is getting flighty. So if we can focus on that, during Raghuram Rajan's period, the current account deficit went up to 4%, but the moment the hot money became flighty, we got panic. But till that moment, we were comfortably financing the current account deficit with the capital outflows. So again, my point is, if you can maneuver the interest rate effectively, then that can stem this process. But in this policy tool, what we have to, focus is, the interest rate and the economic growth, that R and G. If the rate of interest in the real terms, if it goes above the real growth of economy, then we are in trouble. Because on one side, we are increasing the interest rate to defend, our currency and to also tackle the aggressive hawkish mode of Fed and also the financialization of savings. Because right now the interest rate is in negative quadrant. So for that, to tackle that also, we need to increase the interest rate. So it's more than one reason that we need to increase the interest rate. But, public debt management is very crucial. So there, if you're increasing the interest rate, the cost of borrowing of the government can be little trouble. So if you are facing that twin deficit crisis, then, what we can look into is R and G. If the R is going greater than G, then we are in an unsustainable situation. That's exactly what, Moody's rating agency also said, that you keep the interest rate high, but take a call on the rate of growth of economy and the real rate of interest. So if you are comfortable with that, you can go ahead with raising the interest rates. So, that fiscal consolidation, twin deficit crisis, the only way to address these concerns right now, given the real rate of interest is negative, given the hawkish mode of Fed, is only the interest rate difference. So, to all your questions, my single most significant point is interest rate difference.
Yeah, I see that pattern. I get where you're coming from. Mr. Joshi, the falling rupee was supposed to have exacerbated our external debt situation. I think at least in June, July, there was a lot of talk about it. And now there are very few media reports that I see. We haven't seen any alarming news on that front. Is that less of a concern now, debt that is coming up for payment in this calendar year? Do you see that as a concern at all?
Well, I think if it had been a concern, it would have shown up. I think from the government's perspective, we don't have much external debt. I mean, government largely depends on domestic debt. So that is one thing that helps during such events like the one that we are seeing right now. According to one report from the RBI, the unhedged exposure of the stock of unhedged exposure of Indian corporates is about 44%, which means that 44% of the debt that they have is unhedged. So clearly, I think the players who have borrowed abroad and have to service it, I think it's going to, if you have unhedged position, then it becomes even more difficult for you. So it must be happening in pockets, but see, right now, rupee hasn't seen the kind of weakness that it saw during the taper tantrum. It was a massive depreciation during a very short period of time. Right now, it is extremely orderly. Actually, it's even more orderly than during 2017-18 when the Fed was raising rates, trying to normalize the policy. So I think the rupee depreciation itself has not been very severe this time, I mean, to cause any concern.
Okay. Sorry, sir. I will take a step back. I did want your opinion on the CAD as well. If it touches 4%, would you feel that we are comfortable as an economy? What consequences do you see there? Because it seems a vicious cycle.
Yeah, I think so. CAD, I think so. One way to look at this whole episode of currency volatility is to look at it in terms of how vulnerable you are and what is the quantum of shock. So if I take you back to 2013, we were very vulnerable. We were part of the Fragile Five. The shock was minimal. I think the Fed had just announced that it is going to reverse its policy, no action taken. But the rupee depreciated at a much faster pace than it depreciated during the global financial crisis. So right now, I think our vulnerability had been low because we had a lower current account deficit. And I think that helps. And we also have lower short-term foreign debt. That also helps. I think now what is happening is with the current account deficit gradually rising, and I think it's likely to, it's hard to predict at this juncture where it will land, because quite a bit also depends on what happens to your oil prices and other metals, etc., which could come down due to global slowdown. So, but yeah, our assessment is that it is, which was done a couple of weeks back, is that it's going to be around 3% of GDP, which itself is high. So you become more vulnerable to global shocks. And in this environment where I think the US dollar is seen as a safe haven, then I think the capital typically tends to go to US. I mean, and so there is an outflow of capital. So if you look at the dynamics in last one and a half months, actually we've had net inflows and not outflows. I think in August, the inflows were quite large. I mean, net inflows were quite large. So I think depending on how the inflows of capital takes place, I think will determine how what the impact on currency will be. So I think to cut the chase, the rising current account deficit is making you more vulnerable. And I think then you depend more on how much of capital inflows view you favorably. I mean, whether they come to you, how fast they leave. So basically, it's a measure of vulnerability of the economy, and which is rising right now.
Okay. To wind down our conversation, I have a query on rupee trade settlements. We've had that measure, I think, about a month or a couple of months ago. And now we're seeing news about UCO Bank and maybe Yes Bank that enable these settlements in rupee. And countries like Russia, which seem to face sanctions and earlier Iran, we successfully did a rupee trade with. Even when it becomes reality, can the mechanism actually make a dent on the pace at which the rupee is declining? Or these are all drops in the ocean and you need all of these? Mr. Joshi, could you dwell on that before I go to Professor Chaturvedi?
Well, I think my sense is that the dollar is the dominant currency and it's going to stay that way for quite some time. But these measures help at the margin. I think that's all I can say. I think it doesn't make the situation any better for this particular year. I think which is where we have we are vulnerable to capital outflows, and this is not going to fundamentally change the situation. This is only at the margin.
So, Professor Chakraborty, I'm going to ask you to, put a figure to see, where would you feel comfortable? You're saying RER is not a great tool to look at whether the currency is overvalued or undervalued, or to help determine how far the currency devaluation can go. You also talked about the interest rate as a very important tool to fix more than one problem. But if you were in the shoes of the RBI governor and you're stemming volatility, that's your primary responsibility. But, if you say let it depreciate a little bit more, what would your view be? Would, 92, for instance, against the dollar be a comfort to you? Would 85 be, so far and no farther? Would you put a number to that?
I will never take a guess on that, because that's going to be a little tricky. And as Mr. Joshi pointed out, trading in rupees is also going to be a little tricky. But I will be comfortable if the import cover will be close to 15 months. So that's the way we lived last year. Around September 2021, the import cover was close to 15 months. So that could be, even that, I'm not talking like a threshold or anything, rather I will not take a guess on how far we can allow the rupee to depreciate, because it's all the ad hoc configuration of the demand and supply that will fix that. It is market determined. Our exchange rate is market determined. So let the market force play. And I want to clarify my point is the RBI needs to intervene only if the rupee on a sustained free fall. But RBI need not intervene to stem the volatility on a continuous basis, because that can give panic signals. So that was my point which I was trying to convey. And now with this 75 basis point, hike by the Federal Reserve and their communication and the articulation that we will keep, at it, or that keeping at it, that kind of vocabulary or communication is giving panic signals in the market. So that the Fed will keep at it until the job is done. So that's the predominant source of panic in the financial markets, in the global financial markets. And we need to tackle that. Then, we will be able to control the volatility.
I've exhausted my list of questions. Any other gaps that you'd like to fill? Any insights you would want to have dwelt on? First, Mr. Joshi, and then I'll come to the professor.
No, I think this is fine.
Okay, great. Professor Chakraborty, anything that you would have liked to have added?
No, this was exhaustive. I'm happy.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your two being with us this morning. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you so much for having me.